It's time for Intersections, where art and science meet, your weekly hour of conversation, where you learn about curious ideas, creative works, and interesting phenomena with your host, Mark Kiesling, the founder of the Da Vinci Pursuit, and Krista Hoffman-Longton, Assistant Dean for Faculty Affairs and Professional Development at the Indiana University School of Medicine. Now, it's time for Intersections, where art and science meet.
I'm Mark Kiesling, the founder of the Da Vinci Pursuit, where we create a museum without walls so artists, scientists, and the community can create unique interactions and conversations. And in today's conversation, we're going to be talking about the way that our guest, Alexandra Hall, inspires other artists in her native town of Fort Wayne, Indiana, to use art to make spaces that are interesting, ultimately lead to increased in tourism, and I love this other part, enhanced economic development. That's not exactly why we do it, but it's amazing that art does that. Welcome, Alexandra.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, this is great. So give me a little background on you. So where did you go to school, those kinds of things, so I got a little background on who you are.
Sure. So I am an IU Bloomington alum. I actually didn't study art at IU. I studied other things, but as many artists who are self-taught or artists in general, they're just always doing art for as long as they can remember. And when I was kind of at that crossroads of what am I going to be when I grow up, I had been creating art my whole life, and I started selling it casually and decided maybe I'd give it a go and see if I could do this full time. And so about 11 years ago, I gave up all other jobs and I've done art only.
And what form of art? Is it drawing, painting?
I do quite a lot of ink on paper, but the majority of my work is acrylic on canvas or murals, so really large scale pieces, and often very whimsical, loud, colorful, bold work.
I love that. And so, you know, one of the things that I think that artists can really bring is that sense of whimsy to something. And that whimsical nature is, I think, one way that people can approach art. And so your murals, so big murals like on walls and things like that as well.
Yeah, so it really lent itself. I was already painting large canvases that were 5 foot or larger. And so it was really natural for me to step into indoor projects first, to where I was painting large walls and hospitals. And my art lends itself towards children's hospitals, which was something that I found I was able to do. And then from there into outdoor spaces, so even bigger buildings.
That's just really amazing. You also, I think this is interesting too. You also have a political science in your background, right? Isn't that your degree from IU? How does that influence your art?
Well, so in some ways it does. Some of my pieces are a little satirical or they're a little tongue in cheek. And while they might appeal to a younger audience because they're colorful and bright, there might be more story behind some of the works. And that's something I've enjoyed about art, is that it is often the audience that gets to interpret what they want to see. And so I've been able to have quite a lot of fun with my work as far as that goes. And you also need a business mindset to do this as a job. I've found, unless you are lucky enough to come across someone who's going to be an advocate for your work and really manage your career, you have to be that person. And I think having the business or the political science background kind of gave me also that making lists and checking things and researching and all of that has really been helpful in making this a possible career for me.
Yeah, and I think that's really important, Alex. One of the things that, you know, is a challenge for a lot of artists is to make a living doing it. And I don't think it's in sort of the training sometimes. It's sort of there how you can make a living, but it's more on, you know, the techniques and those, which are all important. But I do think that if you're going to want to make a living doing it, you do have to have some grounding in another side of it other than art. So
100%. A lot of the artists that I talk to, what they're reaching out to me about is the basics of starting a small business. You know, these are things that got skipped over. They've graduated, they have really great technical skill and really a nice body of work, but they have no idea how to file taxes or how to create an entity. Do they need to get a lawyer or an accountant? All these things, they just aren't really taught those things. So I'm always happy to help, but it is something that we're missing in some of our education for our schools.
Yeah, I agree. And so I know that in Fort Wayne, you've really kind of also crossed over into the political science because you've been able to muster the political structure of the town, the city of Fort Wayne, to be able to do the work you want with artists and to be able to activate the city. So can you describe what's your work with the city like? And also then how do you attract other artists to that?
So I would say that one of the benefits, again, of just having more of a diversified background was that when a municipality approached me to talk about what it might look like to put public art on a private building within the city, they didn't really know anything. They didn't know what to do. They didn't know how to commission an artist. This was uncharted territory for them. And I found it to be more of an exciting adventure to kind of figure out how can I make this possible? What are the hurdles? Let me get into the rooms with the people who are concerned about what this would mean for their property value, and really start to answer all those questions and figure out the administrative background of what kind of contracts need to be in place. So I saw it as a way to kind of diversify what I was doing. I spent a lot of time alone in a studio, as many artists do, and I found this was a way for me to get engaged in the community and attend some meetings, and little did I know it would turn into kind of a full-time job in itself. But ultimately, what happened is a really robust public art program for our downtown improvement district in Fort Wayne. It was a couple years in the making, but it's been successful, and it's really helped me advocate for other artists and give them opportunities here.
Yeah, and there's been some, I think, people that aren't familiar with Fort Wayne, I think over probably, don't you think, the last 10 years, there's been some real vision, in terms of how it could be a Midwestern downtown city that moved away from its kind of roots in the auto industry and has created, one of the exciting things that I know that downtown created was this idea of a baseball stadium, but that it looks a little like Wrigley Field, and even with the way the city planned stuff around it, and
right.
I think that and then I noticed, and this was quite a while ago that I was in Fort Wayne, but I also noticed the beginnings of art in that there were bicycle racks, but they weren't just bicycle racks, they were more artistically done. So I think you had this, I guess I'd say you had a little bit of a canvas for you to enter into. So there was some interest already.
Oh, yeah. So I think in general, the city's been asking, how can we save ourselves? And that's really the Rust Belt question. And for a lot of these communities that saw a major industry leave, right? You kind of get to a point like we have skilled talent is leaving. We're having a hard time attracting new talent. How do we make our community look approachable and inviting to the companies and the employees that those companies need to hire? So those are like, already you're asking then communities that are conservative or that have done things a certain way for a very long time to change some of those policies and change how they're looking at designing streets, how they're designing in general for around a ballpark. How do you have a massive strategy to bring more people in and to make it appealing to live here? So all of those questions were being asked about the same time and definitely before I really started to get involved as a voice for public art within the downtown proper. So yes, we were like primed and ready for something like this. We just didn't really know how to go about doing it.
That's funny. I do think, and I loved your word using that, why I said it was funny was using the word primed, because it's like a canvas getting ready to be used. But how do you motivate and how do you attract other artists to be a part of the process?
So I would say say initially it was a bit of a challenge because we didn't have a community of artists who'd been exposed to opportunities like this. So the regional talent wasn't as accustomed to doing large scale murals. You also had an entity that was new and artists weren't sure what it was going to be like to work with us. A lot of people had had projects in the past that had failed to happen. So there was a level of education within the arts community that I needed to take on to really let them know that this opportunity was here. And also that we had all these things in place. We had funding, we had permission to paint the walls, all of these things that in past maybe had let them down. I also had a really great, one of those kismet moments. There was an artist who'd done a lot of work in Cincinnati for the Artworks program, which has done a massive amount of work within the city of Cincinnati. And he'd been one of their professional artists for a long time installing works. And he happened to be at the University of St. Francis here in Fort Wayne. And so when I did kind of a cold call over the university and said, hey, I'm thinking of doing this mural program. I'd really love to make sure that the art school here is aware that that's happening. Do you know anyone over here that might be worth engaging with or be interested in public art? And they gave me Tim Parsley's name. And a total foot and mouth moment, I introduced myself to him and I was like, hey, do you know much about murals? Without really knowing that he was like this mural master.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, and so he was also just like, it was so interesting because really it was because we were putting out feelers and engaging with the community for the first time ever, some of these major assets started to appear and we learned that there were people that had been doing indoor murals in schools and had just never gotten the opportunity to do something outside. And so ultimately it was a major networking bloom, a lot of artists coming out of the woodwork, and then also word of mouth. Once you had those first projects done, it was like, when's my turn? How do I apply? I've not done a mural before, but is there an opportunity for me? All of that just started to happen all at once in a big way. And so people were hungry for it. And it was really just a lack of opportunity that had led to kind of a quiet disconnect between downtown and the artists.
Yeah, and what I find in my work, you know, I recruit a lot of artists to do things in the idea of a museum without walls in Indianapolis. And it's this idea often is that they've been kind of really disenfranchised by the entities that are there. Often it is like there'll be a little bit of money available. And so the artist is almost working for free to do it. Or the wall, like you said, the wall has not been approved yet for that, and the artist starts in on something and then there's a work stoppage or they get into legal trouble with something and they don't understand the contract and they don't understand prepping it and then also maybe even protecting it. So there's so many things. So I guess your work is just as much about not only the art but capacity building for these artists.
It's that, and it's also, to your point, there's something to be said for a program that says we've ironed out all the issues with the property location. We found all the funding. We have all the contracts in place that protect both the property owner and the artist, and all you have to do is sign. We've gone through a jury process, so the work itself is approved. Everyone knows what it's going to look like. Like, yes, that it's a quiet in the background, heavy lift that just makes it easy for both the property owner and for the artist in a way that not all programs are successful at. And it's partly because I speak artist. So I know, like, this is something where we need to compensate them. So this project isn't where it needs to be if we don't have enough funding for it. So we kind of get to get ahead of all of those things before someone just cold calls an artist and says, hey, I have a garage door. Can you paint it this weekend?
Yeah, we get we do. You know, it's funny, as artists we get a lot of call outs and you look at them and you go, there's no way that I could do that, you know, for that cost. You wonder, well, what education does that city or town have, or even that business, in terms of, they don't. We haven't done a very good job on the public art side of educating people about what the real costs and labor costs are to be involved, that, you know, they get if I need a plumber, they don't get if I need an artist.
Right.
And so they always, the word I think you probably get a lot of times that I hate is the word exposure. You know, you hear that all the time. Oh, you would want to do it for nothing or less because you're going to get exposure. Well, how much exposure do I really need? Because I can't, you know, eat off of that.
I pay my bills with exposure bucks.
Right, exactly. And that is normal, I think. But you've crossed over that. And I love this back end building. So what you're doing is you're making sure that it can be successful.
Yeah. And we talk about maintenance. So all of those things are also something that get addressed without the artist having the burden of coming back in 5 years because somebody's seeing it bubble up. Like these, they call us and we're able to say like, well, this is an issue because you haven't replaced your gutters. Like we get to really be that liaison with the property owner and also address little things that might happen. So that's also a really lovely part of the project. And I will say, we also occasionally put out a call where an artist is like, that's not nearly enough money. And then I get on the phone with them and I'm like, well, we're cleaning the wall. It'll be primed before you get here. And they're like, oh, like they've never come to a site where the prep's done and the wall's painted. And all they really have to do is like, tell me their paint order and they get to do the job. Like the lift is going to be booked and I've taken care of that. Like those are just so many little things that I think people aren't accustomed to seeing happen. So I'll have internationally renowned artists come into the community. And at first they're really hesitant. After working with us the first time though, I get emails from those really well-known artists and they're saying, hey, you have anything in the hopper for this year? Like we'd really love to come back. If that's not a testament to the fact that it's like fair and it's balanced and it's a good experience, I don't know what is.
No, I think, yeah, you cast that wide net. You want to make sure that you're not all, you want to have local artists, you want to have regional, but why not have some international in that? But you aren't any one or the other. I think what's nice is you give them an even playing field, right? They come in and they can, any of them can, you know, propose what they're going to do. And you're not really giving precedence to the international artists. They've got to compete equally with somebody who might be in Fort Wayne.
Right. And it's also, I think it helps raise the bar here. Local artists know that they're up against someone who's doing work in New York, and sometimes they get the gig and sometimes they don't. It really helps challenge us. And also, it's really neat to see a local artist who's an emerging artist who's never done a mural before have work right next door to someone who's done work in China and Japan and all over the world. And you're like, wow, like how lovely is that juxtaposition?
Yeah. You know, have you seen that some local artists also get known outside of Fort Wayne because of that relationship? Because I would think it would be a two way. So they've created something and somebody may be on the international scene as another artist who didn't get it, but says, wow, this is really spectacular.
And it's mentorship opportunities. So you see where they might know about a festival or an opportunity come up and just kind of let each other know. And you see them branching outside of the city of Fort Wayne. We had a lot of first-time muralists who've now done work all over the state and even outside of the state. So really, it's one of those things where you're broadening the opportunities. And so because they were able to network with someone and ask questions about how they're applying for murals or where it is that they really like going, you open that door.
Yeah. And I think myself about how important it is to start a program like you're talking about, because it's not just about putting murals there. You really are, what you've created, in my estimation, is a wraparound program that says, I'm going to wrap around the city, the citizens, the artists, the local and international community. I'm going to wrap all that together, but I'm going to make it so that it's successful for everybody in there.
That's the hope. And it's been an education. I mean, it's not, a lot of local artists were concerned that jobs were going to outside artists. And so you kind of have to step in and be that advocate for why we would introduce outsider arts. And you have to go to the property owner and also say, like, this isn't something that's going to reduce your property value, or we're here for you. You get to be there. It's the whole step, every step of the process, you'll get to see what's going to happen on your facade. We're not just going to paint it whatever we want. So there's all these reassurances that have happened along the way to make everyone feel like they are aware of what's happening. They feel informed, they feel empowered. It's been a journey, but ultimately that's been part of it, is that every project we walk away from, we now have like a property owner who's an advocate for participating in the project, which has helped us with that. And then we also just have a really great strategy in place as to where we're putting our, we're not just putting it wherever someone says, I want art. We're actually looking at it as a connector, a way to make sure that it's walkable, accessible, all of these things that have really also helped with the ease of tourists to be able to come into town and like just take a tour and be able to see art really easily, block by block. So yeah, it's a full embrace and quite a lot of moving parts, but ultimately, yes, the hope is to make it feel as inclusive and as accessible and win over all of these new advocates everywhere we go.
So Alex, when you're proposing it to a business owner, sometimes they are coming to you, but sometimes you're going to them and saying, you've got a canvas here that we'd like to do something on. Do you use any type of technological or things or renderings to help them visualize what it's going to, their business is going to look like once there's a mural on it?
So actually what I've found is it's kind of dangerous to show them pictures of what their building could look like with an image, because then they might get into that that's what's going to happen. And that's not always the case, but so I try to avoid using imagery directly on their facades or elevation. But what I do like to do is use a lot of data. I think that that's been more of a successful thing to give, to empower them with a little bit of information, testimonials from other business owners. Americans for the Arts is a really great resource for the power of art. So I often will use some of those sayings and also statistics to kind of help with the why behind why we would do this. And really more than anything, what I'm trying to achieve beyond their approval and interest in the project is also their awareness that this is maybe larger than their personal taste in art. And that we are also trying to make sure that this is something that engages the whole community. So hopefully that they kind of have this like altruistic open-mindedness as well as being interested in participating. So some of it is just kind of more about, these are like all the different styles of things that we do. And we hope that you're open to anything that could happen on your facade. And then you end it with, of course, you'll see the design before it happens and we'll be seeking your approval. But we're hoping that they understand the broader community purpose and the why.
Yeah, and I think that's really different than some other cities I've been in, because there's sometimes an approach, you know, where they put it because they just want to cover a wall, but that's not even accessible. I mean, it might be down an alley, but your way of trying to see the mural, you can't really see it. You know, it's kind of there, but it's not. And then other places have just, you know, there's a wall where a building's been torn down. It's going to be ephemeral. They just want to put something up temporary. So your approach is quite different. It yours is strategically seeing, I guess my best word was, you're seeing Fort Wayne as an art gallery, and you're saying, where strategically should these paintings be hung, in a sense, to be painted, right? So you're really curating the downtown area of Fort Wayne.
That's the hope. And I think one of the initial goals was alley activation, which has been proven to be very successful in other places. We do have a really robust alleyway network between some of these old buildings. And so I think that was the easy way, because at first it was like, oh, it's a little hidden. It's not in the front of my building. And now I have the exact opposite. I have people who want them on the front of their buildings. But it is been entirely based on the concept that you would create this open, free to the public outdoor art gallery.
Yeah, I love it. And it really does borrow from there. It reminds me, your idea of talking to the property owner reminds me of, because I did exhibit design work for museums, and that often when we try to show something to a potential donor, it was a little more, the drawings that we showed them were not lying to them, but they didn't give them a definitive thing that they could see something that they absolutely were going to have there, because we weren't sure we could create that. So we were creating impressions first, you know, trust us. This is the kind of work we do. You can see what we do. We want you to come on board with that, because what they don't realize a lot of times is we haven't worked that out yet. And so we have to get the wall. We have to get the commission. We have to get all that first. Then we engage the artistic side, but we don't want you to go, oh, I thought there was going to be a, you know, a cow on that wall. You know, no, there's not. And when we get down to it, that's not where the artist went.
Right. Impressions is a great way to put it. You're basically saying, here's all the multitude of things that we've done in past. Here's the testimonials from very happy property owners. Yours is a site yet to be designed.
Yeah, that is really great. I've been talking with Alex Hall, an artist in Fort Wayne, about her work in encouraging art in the city of Fort Wayne, encouraging artists to work, and the relationship with the city and private owners of buildings. And we'll be right back after this break.
Hello, Indiana. This is Dr. Laura Merrifield Wilson, host of Positively Politics. I'd like to invite you to join our conversation on the current issues and events in politics with the experts who know them best. Every Saturday morning here on WICR at 11:30, we break down the sometimes negative and often complicated world of politics in a nonpartisan, straightforward, and educationally rooted way. You won't want to miss the discussion on Positively Politics Saturday morning at 11:30 right here on The Diamond.
Welcome back. I'm Mark Kiesling, and today we're having a conversation with our guest, Alex Hall, who's an artist in the city of Fort Wayne. And Alex, before we went to break, we were talking about, you know, working with business owners. You have to work with the city, you have to work with the artists, and you're creating this kind of, really, a gallery, an outdoor gallery of art. But I know there have to be some real challenges. And so two of them I really want to kind of take a little deeper dive with you in is the one is funding must always be a problem. And I mean, I'm putting that mildly, but I would think that on the part of some people, they either think the city's funding it or that business owner is totally funding it. Right. Which usually they can't.
Exactly. Every project is specific. Every project has a different funding mechanism. On average, we're probably spending about $20,000 to $25,000 per project. What's really interesting is the general consensus most of the time when someone sees art happen, especially the social media platform that allows for trolls, there's still complaints that as long as it's not my tax dollars being used towards art, I'm okay with this project, or I like this as long as, you know, my potholes are filled and my tax dollars aren't being spent on this program. And that's been the case with this program. It's not city funded specifically. So we're under the umbrella of the Fort Wayne Downtown Improvement District, which is the tax-based improvement district. And a certain percentage of their budget they do spend on this program. So we do have kind of a small budget at the beginning of every year that we know we're going to be able to rely on to do some projects. But really, ultimately, that budget wouldn't allow for us to do a single project just with that budget. What we have to do as an organization is rely on sponsorships to come in. And what I've discovered is we're specifically getting project-specific sponsorships, which means we have a donor, and if you're familiar, I'm sure, with donors got, they have a certain interest in mind and certain goals in mind when they donate money for a specific project. And so you kind of end up in a lot of ways liaisoning between them, a site, and ultimately trying to make sure everyone's happy. So there's a lot of strings often attached to those funds, which can be lovely at times and other times really a challenge. And so if you look at when you have a really large strategy and you know you have a lot of really amazing things you could be doing, and the only limit really is that you don't have any money in your budget to do all of those things, uh, it's it's really upsetting and it can be disappointing. And in the state of Indiana, we are super great at providing a lot of funding for the arts. And what I've discovered in other states when I've gotten to work with other communities is the exact opposite, that often they have some sort of major arts fund that they're able to tap into to do this kind of programming at a municipal level. And so I'm a little disappointed at times that that's the way this state operates, and that funding is still a major challenge despite a lot of our successes on a national stage.
Yeah, and I think there's several things going on in there, and I can identify running, you know, the Da Vinci Pursuit as a nonprofit, and I think two things that in what you were saying, I think are important to point out. One is that donors give to a project. And so a lot of times that's great and we love that, except mm-hmm. they don't realize that there's an ongoing overhead to that. And they say, well, I don't want to, you know, do the overhead, or I don't want to do part of the organization that does it. But, and they want that to somehow magically be sustainable. And mm-hmm. That's the other word we hear from them. Well, after where our funding's gone, what are you going to do to sustain yourself? I don't know how many grants I've had to answer that question. And honestly, I mean, I can say that here. Honestly, I want to answer it with, I don't know how, because what am I going to do if you take away $25,000? Where is it coming from? Because, mm-hmm. you know, you're important. And mm-hmm. I guess I want to get across to donors that they are important in this. But it's not ephemeral. This is long-term work. And you got to stay in the game for a while with us. And you've got to support the organization that makes it possible for us to recruit those artists, to take care of that wall when it starts to crumble. I mean, there's all kinds of things we have to do. So what's your experience with that?
So that is 100% accurate. And then I would even take it a step further and say, as a not-for-profit, when you apply for grants, often I'm finding that the one thing that a grant won't cover is that administrative load, that in-house maintenance, the monitoring of it. So it's not just donors putting stipulations on funds. It's actually even at a grant level, whether it's a foundation or a state grant or a smaller grant from an arts organization, very frequently the administrative component of it is very specifically targeted and stated as not eligible, which essentially I guess means that I get to work for free, but I could potentially find funding for some of these things. And so it is interesting because it's, you would almost assume that shouldn't be something we need to educate about. Should probably already know this, that if somebody's not able to call me to say, I have an issue or I want a project, who are they going to call? Like what, how does that work? So it is, I think, something that I've been very disappointed by, especially, like I said, at the state level with some of these opportunities, they really don't fully understand the load or the lift that's involved in making these projects a reality.
Yeah. And I when you were mentioning other states, which I also do a lot of work with, some of that real infrastructure is what you're talking about is back funded by the state. So what's really happening is the organizations really get a level of funding from the state often that helps them to do that. It's not specific to a project. It is on that. So that then they can go to the donor who wants to have this specific thing, right, that they fund. And then that means our dollars were able to be used in the right way, but we're still backfunding that the organization's important for redevelopment. And so I think you're right. And I think that some of our donors, they get used to that there are states that do that. And so they say, no, I don't want to fund that back thing, but they don't understand that maybe in the state of Indiana, that's a problem. I also think, and I don't know if this is true, but people have said that sometimes, and I'm sure you had to overcome this hurdle a little bit, but sometimes I think people in Midwestern cities often have, and I was born and raised in the Midwest, and so I know, but often have this idea that, you know, we really don't need to do it that well, you know, that it's beyond us, right? You know, well, let's just have a piece of art, but we don't have to have it, you know, we're not New York, and I'm not downplaying anybody. I'm just saying there is kind of this attitude that I think we have to overcome, that to educate people that we are worthy of what we're of having beauty and great things.
Culture, it's an acceptance of mediocrity. It's just like, you know, that's what we're worthy of. 100%. It's interesting. I think when we first started doing the program, social media has been really a good window into some of those thoughts of the community, because people are like, oh, are you in Chicago? Oh, where is this? Is that, you know, where did you travel to? Like, the fact that these things couldn't possibly have been a backdrop within the city in which that individual lived, that was really interesting, because that suggests that that wider audience of people living here had no concept that that was possible here. I think now it's gotten better. I mean, as we've improved and increased the programming, but to your point, I think the budgets, when you say, well, this sculpture is going to cost $500,000, they're like, oh, well, that's big city. That's big city money. So we'll have to do the baby version of that, or just not do that at all. And that, to me, is really, that's the saddest point. That's where you've lost them, because ultimately there's no reason why we shouldn't be getting multi-million dollar investments in the arts here at that level. So still an education curve.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, back to what you do. So that's a part of your job too, for free. That you're, you know, I mean, you've got a lot of education pieces, education of donors, education of the artist, the city, but also education of the community. And the community, really, it's important that they understand that. And I think you are beginning to break that through that barrier, because you're getting success on people realizing that it's a part of economic development, that sustaining Fort Wayne beyond what it was into the future is going to require a lot of different efforts, not just the artistic effort, but many different fronts all working at the same time.
Right. I think that's more for the property owner speech. You know, what is it that you're trying to get tenants into this giant building, and you've got vacancies? Like, what makes this building cool? Maybe you being engaged in this way. And so the economic development angle has been really helpful for us, because it's part of that larger puzzle, right? You can put in a beautiful ballpark and you can have a great zoo, but the more pieces of that you bring together, the more successful you'll be as a community on a competitive scale with other communities.
I agree. And I think that as you raise that level, we've seen those successes happen. You know, we've seen cities where they were not a big city, but they raised their profile in a way that was unbelievable. And a lot of times we see them and think of they're only on the coast, but that's not true. There are cities throughout the Midwest and through the South that have actually activated themselves in not just with the arts, but the arts as a part of an overall bigger package to say, we're worthy of your support here, even as a destination to come right. See us. And that's a really big thing. And the other thing that always occurs to me, and this is back on something that you were talking about in our first part of the show, was the idea that getting across ideas in a community, sometimes that's very conservative, there is always a worry that what is the artist going to state? What are they going to say with that painting? So how do you navigate that so that you do get genuine kinds of works that are provocative, right?
Right.
And raise an issue, but at the same time, don't get too many people's feathers ruffled.
Oh, so this is something that I sometimes struggle with, the fact that maybe I would love to be more provocative, challenge more, create more conversation within the community. At first, the artwork that we asked for was just from people's portfolios. We said, submit whatever you'd like. And so we were just putting up art that was designed art for art's sake without a theme. And the only real directives that we had were to not have profanity or something religious or political, in part because I still operate under the Downtown Improvement District, and so there is still some city governance there, and we do have to look neutral in a lot of ways. So those were pretty much the rules. Those rules haven't changed, but what is lovely is that we've been able to install some projects and do some projects that I didn't know our city was capable of doing. We had, during the George Floyd protests, we had some windows get broken, and then a lot of community city buildings were boarded up as a preventative measure. And on those boards, we were able to activate that new network of artists that we had built, and they came out and did social justice artwork, and they were really given the opportunity to say whatever they wanted to say. So that was like a platform that I know, had we not been in existence, we wouldn't have been able to provide or create for the artists that wanted to share their voice through their creative talent. So those are some of the things that we've been able to do more like on a temporary level. Like, it's ephemeral. Those boards are now gone. But it was appreciated and embraced by the community. And again, it challenged, I think, who our community thought we were. The idea that you were able to drive into downtown and see nothing but social justice cause artwork for 3 weeks, 4 weeks. I don't think that your average person out of Fort Wayne would have thought that that was possible or something that our city was capable of accepting 10 years ago. So we've seen broad strides in the right direction as far as artwork that can create conversation and challenge this community. I think that, like everything else that we've discussed, we're still working towards being better at some of those pieces that would maybe be even more in your face, even more evocative. And my hope is that for some of the foundation we're building, that we get to a place where a property owner could, on their own, commission something that really challenges this community. And it would be something that, because of what we've built, people accept and are there for the conversation and allow for it to happen because it needs to happen.
Yeah, I think, Alex, you've built this really great framework that is going to help you do that in the future. One of the things, and back on our funding idea too, and tied to this, is one, I think, of the challenges is getting people to understand stakeholders, granting agencies, the state, the idea that being small and nimble is really important, and that you can't leave a lot of this work to big, like the art museum. You can't, in other words, they aren't nimble. They couldn't do what you just did. They're not capable because they're a big institution. They're, they've got to take care of themselves first. And this idea of being able to respond to the community, where the community was responding to something horrible. And then you were able to use artists to help the community have conversations and to work through, well, why are people so angry? What were they angry about? Or even to think they were angry rather than just being, looting, or they were just destroying things. They didn't understand where the anger came from. But you're using artists in a very nimble way to create a community conversation.
That's something, and I've had very frank conversations with a lot of public art commissions. They don't have the flex and the ability to react in that way because of the way city government is structured. It's part of why a downtown improvement district exists, is that they have the capacity to be more reactive. It's also great to see that there is a public art commission here, but they wouldn't have had that ability to be as reactive, as flexible, and as quick to turn around and use funding in that way and activate, or have the relationships to activate like that.
Yeah, and you really are, what I think is wonderful, you really are proving to your community that you can trust us, and that we're not just doing something for controversy, but we might be doing something that's important for our community to think about or to rally around. And have a meaningful conversation about. And that's the real role of art. Sometimes we can take it as a work of art or a painting or a sculpture, or we can take it as a piece of music or dance, and we can, you know, embed in there some really thoughtful, provocative things, but in a way that people can accept it. And I think that's a big role of the art, is to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Just a reminder that the Da Vinci Pursuit brings together artists, scientists, and members of the community to engage in conversations that explore the intersections between art and science. We encourage you to explore further in conversation with others and in your household any of the ideas that we're exploring today on this show, and we'll be right back.
No alarm clock. No traffic to negotiate. No staff meetings to attend. Sunday is your day, so do yourself a favor, tune out all that noise, and tune in for Sunday Baroque.
Sunday morning from 5 to 9 here on 88.7 WICR.
Welcome back. I'm having a conversation with our guest, Alex Hall, an artist in Fort Wayne, about her work in the community to activate it. But Alex, I know your own background and your own story, and in your story, there was something that was really moving to me, that as a child, you had some illness that caused you to want to draw and paint a lot as part of that. Can you describe a little bit of your journey into art that way?
Sure. So as I mentioned earlier in the podcast, being a creative, you kind of always create. And what I discovered, especially when I wasn't well, is that it was a major catharsis for me. It was something that allowed me to escape the same way. I enjoy reading for the same reason, but this was something that I could create and lose myself a little bit in that process. And that helped me cope often with the things going on in my life, even today, if that for me. A big part of why I probably spent so much of my time drawing was that I didn't have the opportunity to kind of have a normal childhood in some way. So I had an unusual amount of time to myself, and that has probably led to the career that I have today. So if there was a silver lining to those kinds of things, it's that I really found myself in art.
Yeah, you know, and that really, that's a wonderful thing for you to say, because it also speaks to the role of art therapy for all of us.
Yeah.
You know, that rise of coloring books, there's a reason for, you know, adults to engage in artwork, engage in doing that. And some of it is just a way of seeing the world differently because of the way we look. But some of it is also just a way of learning to take some of our stress and anxiety away. When we're doing it. And I think, you know, seeing you do that, I know, can you describe a little bit of what your current work is like? I don't know, it's harder on a radio, but what kinds of work are you doing now?
So I do a balance of my own work, that I have ideas on my own, and then I also have a lot of commission work where it's a little more steered. But for my personal work that I really enjoy doing, I am influenced a lot by animals, patterns, and historical costumery, books, and also just kind of tying together storyline. So for the purposes of kind of maybe creating a visual, I was in London at the Natural History Museum, and I realized that of all the hundreds and thousands of taxidermied specimens that were harvested long before we really understood the impact that was having on the world, there's not a full specimen of a dodo. The dodo bird was made extinct before by Dutch sailors. And the version of the dodo that we kind of understand to exist is kind of based on both a children's book concept from Lewis C. Carroll, Alice in Wonderland, and then also some sketches, some original kind of crude sailor sketches of like this bird that they were eating and killing on the island. And so When I got back from that trip, I was just like, wow, I was really impacted by the idea that we really don't know what the dodo really looked like because of our impact on the environment. And so in my very bold way, I don't use black, black paint. I like to use really saturated color palettes. So I created kind of my version of maybe what I thought the dodo looked like dressed in a 16th century getup. And and then that bird surrounded by other things that I just kind of was surrounded by my usual life, lots of books and discarded teacups and coffee pots. And then each of the book titles had something to do with flight, just kind of as a tongue-in-cheek moment about the fact that the dodo couldn't fly because its predators, he didn't need to, and so that's not how they evolved, and ultimately it led to the demise as soon as humans showed up. So there's the Wright Brothers book and In Flight book and a couple of other actual titles about flying. So those are just some of the concepts that I've thrown into this very saturated, very colorful, bright piece.
About how big is this piece, Alex?
So it's on the smaller scale, actually. What I do is about 4 foot by 3 foot, which I think a lot of people would still consider quite a nice size piece of wall art. I tend to like to paint bigger than that even, but it's quite impactful when you have this character that is like life size in this very bright way on a canvas that size. So that's part of why I love it. It's just so in your face. You can't ignore it.
Yeah, I love that. And your idea, it probably, I'm thinking of that oversaturation or heavily saturated, that creates a little bit of fantasy in and of itself and whimsy. I would, you know, that artistically, I think that's really fun that you can do that. Mm-hmm. It takes a little bit out of realism into being in that other, but not quite abstract either, because it's really there.
Yeah. It's interesting because when I work with galleries at times, they're not really sure how to categorize. So whimsy is often a word that gets used.
Yeah.
Surrealism isn't quite it, because I do like my characters end up kind of having very realistic features at times. So there's just a lot of things tied into it. But the themes are really meant to be both bring you joy because of all the color, but also maybe make you think. And then I often tie in these like more elaborate storylines if someone ever really wants to ask as to why I did the thing I did.
Right. And I think you find as an artist yourself that you would be, what motivates you to do it and the storyline that you want to create and all that, that is the way that you move it forward. But whether the audience or the viewer really gets that, I get the sense that that's not as important. That's not what you're trying to drive home. You want them to like it or find their own things in it. Am I right with that?
Yeah, I really love hearing people's thoughts, even if it's negative or if they mistake it for a different animal even. There's something about how are they being impacted by it, what's their takeaway, that I really enjoy. Obviously, I hope that ultimately, if they see the full collection together of some of those pieces, they'll understand that I'm really trying to drive home, like, you're killing the environment. Stop. Please do the things that would help make that not the case. Remember the dodo for that reason. But ultimately, yes, I'm also interested in just how they're reacting to the piece.
Yeah, I like that. And you're taking that in putting it, like you said, it's more than one piece a lot of times. And so as an artist, you're trying to create a series of things that help tell that story and reinforce it for people, because they have to see more images sometimes to be able to put together, because they don't have the real, you almost, I think you're my kind of art same way. I have this kind of video that plays and I've got a whole piece of story in there and I'm capturing a snapshot of parts of it. And so for me, I've got that whole background, but then the person looking at it, they haven't been through that process of thinking like you're thinking. So you're provoking that to begin with.
Right.
That's really
wonderful.
Yeah.
I think as a museum, yeah, you recognize like as a collection, there's a bigger story that's more easily told, and then on its own, sometimes that's not as easy to see the the viewer that just shows up and sees that only that piece.
So obviously as an artist who's professional and commercial, you have to make a living. So you have commission pieces and that, but where does your other work then end up going in? Because you have gallery shows or what happens?
Yeah. So I really only try to do like one or two shows a year, and I show less and less within my own community. I think that's maybe a whole other podcast, but the pricing of artwork from Indiana to the coast in San Francisco or in Boston, those price points and what people expect to pay for a piece of work are hugely different. And so I've been struggling for a long time between, is it okay that my artwork isn't affordable to your average Indiana buyer, but is something that is a number that's acceptable on the coast or in some of these other markets so that people don't disregard it as not good because the price is so low as to what they're compared to. So I have shown less here. And when I do, I don't expect to move my big works. I tend to sell reproductions really well locally. It's a price point that's a little bit better for everybody.
Right.
And then I do festivals. So before COVID, I traveled quite a bit to some of those bigger markets and did well there. And I just not gotten back into that yet. So I think in the next year or so, I'll probably branch out again and start showing in those markets that really understand some of those higher price points for work scale.
That's really great. Thank you for bringing this whole bit of story to us. And I love seeing you both as a working artist professional yourself, but also what you're doing for the greater community and also for the greater artists community. And thank you so much, Alex.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure to talk about it.
I want to thank Alex Hall, our guest, who's a Fort Wayne based artist. And until next time, I'm Mark Kiesling, reminding you to tune in again when we explore more curiosities from the intersection of art and science.
You've been listening to Intersections, where art and science meet, with your host, Mark Kiesling, the founder of the Da Vinci Pursuit, and Krista Hoffman-Longton, Assistant Dean for Faculty Affairs and Professional Development at the Indiana University School of Medicine. Just a reminder, the Da Vinci Pursuit brings together artists, scientists, and members of the community to engage in conversation that explore the intersections between art and science. We encourage you to explore further in conversation with others. Any of the ideas explored in today's show at www.thedaVinciPursuit.com.